Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Chris here with Kate and Kristen as usual, and we are here to discuss The Ending of Thrawn by Timothy Zahn. It feels like this one didn't take nearly as long as previous books did. I don't know, is that just me?
I think that's just you.
Oh, well.
Or maybe it's because I'm just ready for a new dawn because I'm so fucking extra.
That's true. Kate's been ready for a new dawn since literally episode one.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Oh, well,
I mean, to be fair, before we started this pod, I was gonna read it by myself, and then we started this pod, and you're like, we should read this instead. And I was just like, yes, Beth Rubis is a beautiful human who wrote a beautiful book, but also, can I please have my Canarific
That's true. I also knew that we couldn't start you on a new dawn, or else you would do that and then not do anything else in the podcast.
You're
So,
so mean.
oh
Oh
my
my
God,
God.
stop fighting, Mom and Dad. Not to get like too into actual points too quickly, but I think part of the reason that it felt so quick was because it was so episodic. So it was like a lot of the story was like the same thing, even though it was like different and like well written. But it was like episode, end. So it just kind of felt a little bit different than I think some of the other books that we read.
Yeah, it definitely did. I think, like, because I mean, I'm in my head comparing it to Bloodline by Claudia Gray, which we read in episodes 4 through 8, I think.
Yep.
And,
So it
like,
was.
that one, the action was just, like, so constant, like, from the get-go, that it like, felt not like a chore because I absolutely loved it, but it just, like, it felt, like, draining to read it. Whereas this one, like, because it was so episodic, like you said, Keeks, it was, I think, a little bit easier to digest.
Yeah, definitely. And like we're spending the same number of episodes on each, so anyway,
That's
what are we drinking
true.
today?
Oh, are any of us drinking? I feel like we're not.
I'm
I'm
drinking.
drinking
Go ahead, Kate.
my second glass of kombucha, not because I actually drank the first one, but because right before we started recording, Chris spilled my first glass of kombucha like all over my crotch, which was delicious.
Oh,
right.
stop
All
saying
right.
that. Don't
All
say
right.
crotch and delicious together on this podcast again.
I'm just saying, there were two options. There were two directions I could have spilled it in. There was spilling it on Kate, or there was spilling it on our laptops and the mic.
The mic is
So,
new.
really,
Don't spill it on the mic.
yeah, I subconsciously made the right decision here.
Okay, that is accurate, but I still smell real weird. Anyway.
Same. You needed to shower anyway. I told you that.
Thanks.
I like to tell Kate to shower
Even though
whenever
you
I
like
possibly can,
everything.
because she's like me
Now
and
I'll
she
never
hates it.
post and tweet at around 8:30 every night and tell her to shower.
Thanks,
8:30
everybody.
Eastern.
Yes, 8:30 Eastern. We are a cross-country podcast, so we are in all the time zones. It's great. I'm drinking I was gonna say a yellow LaCroix. Lemon would be the flavor, but
Love that yellow.
it is yellow.
Fair. I can't even argue with that. I'm.
Oh, I hate to tell us the flavor either. You're just like, it's yellow.
Oh, it's. I
That's
said
all.
lemon. No, I said
Oh,
lemon. You just
okay.
were.
I am drinking a clear water. No bubbles. Nothing special about it. It was
Wow.
filtered. Came out of a Brita filter.
Fancy.
Oh, yum. I
Yeah.
bet it's cold too.
I'm bougie like that. Anyway, so Thrawn, I feel like this book has just been such a like series of like reevaluating Thrawn and like because we already knew him of course from Rebels, yeah, and like we knew kind of what he was about after watching him all through season 3 of Rebels, but like just learning about his origin and like how he became the Grand Admiral that we see in Rebels, and I feel like it's like been a little, it's I don't know, I feel like he's different and the same.
Totally, and we will talk about that in greater detail. where the end of the book leaves us is he's just been promoted to Grand Admiral, which literally leads right into the third season of Rebels, where he pops up and Price introduces him, and there, he clearly by the time he gets to Rebels, like it's clear that he's taken her up on her offer of, shepherding him basically through the political process and being his partner in crime, basically, which is kind of
I
interesting.
feel like almost like his patron. I don't really feel like it's a partnership.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's
I
a
mean,
good point.
do we think that? I mean, we'll talk about this probably more in the wrap up, but I wouldn't know. I haven't read the outline yet. But do we think Price is capable of like having real partnership, or is it more just? I think all of it is like not that, even what she had with Tarkin.
Yeah,
I don't think she is.
No, it really feels like both of them are on the same level in terms of they will use whatever and whomever as tools to claw their way to the top. And I actually have some questions, honestly, about just point of view and unreliable narration and things like that. But anyway.
I don't know that Thrawn is like that, though, at least not in the book. You know, it's hard to tell in Rebels, but like, in the book, he does have partners, though, because he has Eli, who, like, we see, you know, he spends the whole book grooming, and then we find out at the end he groomed him for real reasons, which we'll get into. But then, like, almost like his connection with Night Swan is almost, he's definitely his counterpart, but it almost feels like a partner relationship. Like, there, it's, you know, just to continue harping on the only good, you know, comparison that I've had throughout this whole book with Sherlock Holmes. It's Holmes and Moriarty. Like, they can't exist without each other.
They're, like, basically office married.
Yeah.
And I think this kind of is a segue into the next point. So, we're talking about... sorry, I just read Chris's name and thought it said Chiss and got confused, which just tells you where I am. But, so we're talking about Thrawn and Rebels. So do we think Eli's absence in Rebels has anything to do with Thrawn's behavior in Rebels, or our perceived difference, if any?
Ooh.
What a great question.
I didn't even think of that.
This is why I don't read the outline before.
Yeah, right?
And then you just start riffing and it's great. That is a great question. I don't know. Because you do kind of see Eli as I don't want to say this word. He's kind of like a... I was going to say humanizing influence, but that's really fucking rude. He's kind of a grounding influence on Thrawn, right? Like, Thrawn is this super incredible genius, but Eli's always talking to him on this, like, this very earthy plane, because that's what Eli does, right? He's a supply officer. He wanted to be. He just deals with things. He likes things to be tactile. Like, he likes numbers. Like, he wants hard data. Like, that's so interesting. I'm just pulling shit out of my ass right now. Such a good question.
I think that totally tracks, though, because, like, one of the things that I had kind of been struck by is that, like, in this book, Thrawn is always very, like, he's very calculating. He's very, you know, thinks about, you know, people as resources or people as assets. People, I mean beings, apologies. Because he refers to the Wookiees as the property of the Empire, assets of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But in Rebels, he kind of feels more evil, for lack of a better term. I mean, me and Kate rewatched Zero Hour, which is the Star Wars Rebels season 3 finale, where Thrawn leads an ambush of the rebel attack group. The rebel base on Adalon. And you kind of see him being like, I am not accepting your surrender. I'm going to destroy you, and you're going to know it was me. And, like, blowing up ships and, like, being like, no, we don't need to take these prisoners. Like, there wouldn't be any leadership on that ship. You can blow it up. Like, but then, like, we have Eli in the book who's, like, kind of his conscience in, you know, the back of his mind, you know, whether it's with the Wookiees and talking about how uncomfortable the enslavement of the Wookiees makes him, or whether it's his, you know, discomfort and suspicion of Thrawn using the repair ships and their crew as bait for Night Swan. You kind of see him seeing the human cost of these battles. And it's interesting that you say that, Keeks, that, like, he's what's missing from Thrawn Rebels, or from Rebels Thrawn, and makes him more evil. I think that really tracks.
So I totally agree with both of you are saying about Thrawn, the Thrawn that we see in Rebels, which is who we were all introduced to first, of course. But I think there's, like, another facet to that, which is that, so you guys both said that Eli is sort of, like, the Thrawn's moral compass, for lack of a better phrase, but it's really, like, you know, it's who grounds him, kind of, right? It's who makes him
right.
See things from, like, a sort of quote-unquote normal Empire perspective. I don't know, there's not, like, a good way to explain it, but I think people are getting our point. Regardless, there's no Eli there. Because there's no Eli there, he doesn't have anybody to that he has to explain things to. So, I mean, it's right. not like in the book. I don't think there was any situation where Thrawn explained the plan to Eli and then took any constructive feedback from him. But I think it definitely, like, made Thrawn put things into a perspective. Like, you know, I don't know. What I have in my mind is, like, you really understand something once you can, like, explain it to somebody else. And I'm wondering, like, how... I mean, Thrawn is a genius, but I'm wondering, like, how much of him figuring out how to help Eli figure it out, or in the very beginning, like, tell Eli what the plan is, really, like, helped Thrawn's plans to some degree.
So that's an interesting point. Sorry, you're not done.
Oh, no. I was just going to say... And the other thing that I thought about when we were talking about Eli not being present is... Is Thrawn mad that he gets to go hang out with the Chiss and Thrawn can't? Like, is Thrawn... I mean, like, we know that it was his grand plan to, like, make Eli, you know, kind of shape him up to go be the leader of the Chiss, but is he now sort of, like, maybe having regrets about that? Like, I would love to go be with the Chiss and... do that stuff that Eli is doing, but I can't. I have to fucking do this shit for the Empire, and I'm not happy about it. I don't know.
I don't think he really cares about that so much, because I feel like he thinks that by remaining with the Empire, he's providing a service for the Chiss, and by sending Eli to kind of be an ambassador for the Empire, that he's, again, it's all... adding into his grand plan of whatever the fuck he wants for the Chiss ascendancy. I don't really get the sense that he misses home terribly much.
Got it.
Like, there's not really a lot of evidence of that, honestly.
No, and, I agree. I guess I was just thinking from a perspective of, like, I don't know, like, in my own life, I've been like, okay, I have to do this thing, and then I do the thing, and then I'm like, oh shit, now I have all of this stuff that I have to deal with while I was putting it off to try to do the thing that I was trying to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, he's kind of a victim of his own single-mindedness, and, like, his original goal was, like, to help the Chiss Ascendancy and, like, help the Empire, but mostly to help the Chiss Ascendancy against whatever evil is lurking in the unknown regions. But, like, I don't know. I kind of buy that, because, like, you do get a lot of, and particularly in toward the end of season 3 in Rebels, you get a lot more of, like, kind of imperial, like, jingoism from Thrawn than you do in the earlier bit, and also in this book, because, like, he talks in Zero Hour, which, you know, again is the series season finale, and he says, like, I will make a gift to you to my emperor, or something to that effect. But he uses the phrasing my emperor. And, like, I don't get the feeling he would do anything like that in this book. And I do kind of wonder if, like, in achieving his goal of sending Eli to the Chiss and therefore, like, severing himself from his most grounding influence, who is, like, not Imperial, like, the only non-Imperial around him for the most part, if he, like, almost subjects himself to a little bit too much of the Kool-Aid.
Mm. I mean, it's funny you say that, because Eli obviously is...
an Imperial.
The Empire.
Right. Right. It's just... I'm thinking all these things now, Cakes, that you brought up, what you were saying about Eli being gone and how that may or may not affect Thrawn's personality and his actions and stuff. Because when we were watching Zero Hour, we were watching it because I wanted to scream about Kanera, but also mostly because... we wanted to look at his battle tactics during the Battle of Adelon and compare them to the battle tactics he uses in the book, right?
Right.
And they're super different. It's so fascinating. So basically, his strategy for Adelon is, first of all, to create a blockade, which we talked about, to prevent any of the rebels from escaping, which tracks. That kind of makes sense for his battle style. In the novel, but then he starts doing some interesting shit. Namely, he starts interplanetary bombardment, which is kind of this shock and awe strategy, this kind of psychological warfare that you just don't see in the novel. And it's just like kind of this interesting added layer of malice and cruelty that maybe Eli kind of held him back from. Because, like, you know, when he was talking to Night Swan, he was just like, I don't really intend to, you know, harm any innocents. And he says that during other battles as well. You know, he criticizes some other higher up at one point for basically suggesting extraneous loss of life. And then Thrawn kind of, like Chris said, Thrawn kind of buys into that, and he's just like, yeah, we're just going to, like, kill all of them, and it'll be fine. And then he goes in with ground forces, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if you ever really see him during a ground attack in a battle that major, maybe just because he, you know, hadn't stumbled upon a battle that major during the course of the events of the books. I don't count his experience with the Aphes? On Bodichev?
Aphes, I think.
Yeah. I don't really count that as a ground battle, but it was just interesting. Anyway, yeah. I'm just riffing. But
I don't know. Adelon felt more ego driven.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And like maybe the part of him that Eli kept in check with his groundedness exposed to that ego, like because I mean it's the Empire. It's full of sycophants. Like all he probably hears from everybody is how great he is at this point. Now he's a Grand Admiral. There's nobody on his level to hate him. To his face, at least. Like,
right.
Me and Thrawn have that in common.
Yes, very obviously. You are the most Thrawn person I know.
Grand Admirals.
Oh my God.
I know, I'm definitely a Grand Admiral. sorry, I just like totally, as usual, took us way off track.
Not really. Not at all.
No.
But it was a fun tangent.
I liked it. It was good.
So let's talk about Night Swan, because I don't know how I feel about Night Swan. I have many feelings about Night Swan.
Mm-hmm. I was mad fucking disappointed.
I know, like, that's, so, like, I was, the whole, like, code name thing, like, clearly Night Swan's a code name. You, like, expect it to be some big grand reveal that he's somebody that we know of, and then he was kind of a nobody. Like, obviously he's a genius, like, in his own right, but he's kind of a nobody. It was weird to me that he wasn't anyone famous.
Well, and he doesn't tie in... Well, yeah, I mean, anyone famous, I was just going to say, he doesn't tie into any of the rest of the media, but...
that's what you mean. At this point, we're kind of guessing that Signy was his real name, or maybe not, but Signy is probably the closest thing to a name that we know for him. But, like, there's no one that we know who he is. Like, there's no... And I've read the other books, and there's no Signy, and there's no Night Swan... Like, it's not even like it's somebody from, like, the Tarkin book who got away or something like that, to my knowledge. Like, it's nothing like that.
That's so... Definitely think he's going to show up somewhere, though.
Nah, he's
oh, no,
dead.
He's dead. Well, he's dead. Never mind.
Now, like,
why do I always do this? Do we think they're going to show up? Kristen, you know they're dead. I'm like, oh, fuck, sorry. Super dead.
So,
Do you think Tupac's going to show up in one of these books? Or, like...
Oh, my God. Y'all. Ahsoka lives.
Ahsoka does live.
Okay, so here's my line of thinking that I just literally just pulled out of my ass like 10 minutes ago when I was staring at the outline. I'm doing a Kristen. So a lot of the time when we're observing media, Star Wars media from from the Rebellion's point of view, we have these big figures, obviously, in the Empire who get names and stuff like that. But then we have, you know, there are a lot of faceless Imperials that we also get to. A perfect example of this, or just like illustration of this, is in Rebels, where you have all those anonymous Imperial officers whose hats are like pulled way down over their face, so they don't have to animate their face. And I'm wondering if that's kind of Tim Zahn turning that on its head, because this is from the Imperial point of view, and it doesn't really matter who Night Swan's name is. He's just an example of a person who had no use for either the Empire or the Rebellion until he realized what was going on.
Yeah, sorry. That was kind of like a great point that I have no response to.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Wait, does anyone remember when they attacked Bodichev? Did they name the governor?
I think they did, but it was like, here's his name, bye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
they mentioned it like one time, like him and the conspirators, and they mentioned them like one time, and that was like it.
Fascinating. Yeah, no, maybe. Interesting. I don't know, but it's interesting though, because like you do have while at the same time he's not that important in the grand scheme of things, he is really Thrawn's counterpart, at least toward the beginning. Like, he obviously beats Thrawn on the, oh god, whatever, the ship that he steals, whatever the name
is. The Dromedar.
Dromedar, thank you. On the Dromedar, he steals the T'Vana gas. But then, like, by
wait,
the end...
we still don't find out how he does it, right?
No, he said professional
god
secret.
Yes.
I thought so.
But then you physics. Do... like, you do get the sense by the end of it that he, like... Thrawn's kind of been playing cat and mouse with him and just, like, feeling him out this whole time. And, like, when Night Swan's talking to Eli, you know, on his base... before, you know, that final battle, like, you kind of get the sense that he's been, like, trying to pull all these strings, and, like, he's, you know, the spider at the center of the web, like, trying to get Thrawn. But then by the end, you kind of feel like Thrawn is actually the one who's just been baiting him this whole time, and Thrawn knows exactly what's been going on.
Yeah, Thrawn is always, like, 10 levels above everybody else.
Which is kind of an interesting dichotomy, because, like, Signy's been trying to pull political strings, and Thrawn has just been beating him. Yeah. And even though Thrawn doesn't understand politics.
He sure doesn't. Still.
Interesting.
Somehow. Still doesn't understand that people are fucking assholes.
I know, right? Even though he's a fucking asshole. Anyway.
Right. I don't know. I found their conversation very interesting. I mean, obviously because it was meant to be, like, you know, this big expository thing where you learn about, you know, the Chiss and you learn about why Thrawn left. But, like... you do kind of have this sense from Thrawn about how, like, the ends justify the means of whatever he's doing. And so, like, the ends of, you know, getting Night Swan to be on his side have justified this whole long game. Or the ends of... and that's something that you do get from Rebels, Thrawn, of the ends justify the means of, doesn't matter who dies as long as Thrawn gets his win.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, he's basically playing a shell game this entire time. Like, you know, he told the Empire, I'll help you out if, on the off chance that maybe one day, if the Chiss are in need, you'll help them.
It's just kind of wild.
Right,
that's
right.
What it's all riding on.
I know, isn't it? And then he's just like, no, I'm actually just completely infiltrating the Empire, and what I want is to influence the way the Empire moves in the future. Like, I'm in it for the long game, which is fascinating. Because he thinks, I think one of the most fascinating parts of their conversation was that he thinks that the Empire, but the Emperor, that he won't live forever. And once it comes time to choose a successor, he's going to be so influential that he's going to have a hand in choosing the new Emperor. And here's the thing about Thrawn, is that he's great at tactics and anticipating, you know, what his enemy's next steps are going to be, and he's got a plan for every other, you know, option any route that they could take. But the one thing he consistently underestimates is the Force, because the Emperor ain't going nowhere because he's dark side and he's batshit.
Well, yeah, and it's just like, we get so, I mean, obviously we know that to be true, but we are coming from this with a much more perfect picture of that, right? Whereas, like, Thrawn is like, I don't know, he's a fucking emperor. He just, like, sits, you know, dicks around, and I don't know what he does. He's just, people trust him or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know that for all that Thrawn sees, I think he definitely is kind of still under the veil of ignorance that the rest of the Empire is, that thinks of the Emperor as human and doesn't realize he's a Sith Lord. Because it's a secret that the Emperor is a Sith Lord, remember? Like, people besides maybe Tarkin don't know that Palpatine is a Sith Lord.
Okay, but they know Vader is one.
They know Vader's one. That's what makes Vader so terrifying, because he's the only one. And he's, for whatever reason, just deeply loyal to the Emperor.
Man!
For whatever reason.
A smart monkey could figure that out, for fuck's sake. Jesus Christ, everybody.
Well, I mean, they do name their kids things like fucking, like, Dark Lighter. Driller.
I just hate you sometimes. I don't know. I just really wanted to draw this parallel between Thrawn being like, I think the Emperor's gonna kick the bucket at some point, even though he's not, because, well, we're gonna read Aftermath at some point. And the fact that the only thing that trips him up in the Battle of Adelon is the Bendu, the biggest, angriest space moose. Because he's just like, what the fuck is this?
Well, nobody knows what the fuck it is. That's totally fair.
True.
That's true. No, but I think it's a good point. Like, he just, like, pretty consistently underestimates the Force. And, like, he clearly doesn't have a good understanding of it. Which, I'm going to come back to this point, because I do want to talk a little bit about what could be lurking in the unknown regions. But before that, I also want to talk about, like, Thrawn's exile a little bit, and, like, why... We talked a little bit about it, but, like, I don't know. It's weird to me that Thrawn has been, like, playing this long game the whole... I don't know. It's something didn't quite track with me about the explanation.
Well... Okay, sorry, Chris, we're, like, talking, like, a bunch. I don't know.
No, I was just going to make another stupid point. That's another thing me and Thrawn have in common, is we don't understand the Force. Anyway, thanks. As usual, I'm coming in with the fired nonsense. But, beautiful. No, I agree with you, Chris, though. It didn't really track for me either. I was like, did he just explain that away in two sentences? That seems not totally legitimate, but okay.
Well, he tells Nightsong what he says this is a true story about his exile, but then you have the journal, whose excerpts begin every chapter, that he gives to Eli, and it's just like, which story is true? Like, is he telling Nightsong what he thinks Nightsong wants to hear? Is he telling Eli what he wants to hear? And he just fabricated this whole fucking, like, weird-ass journal. Like, and then you start questioning the last entry, where he's just like, Eli, you're my friend. I love friends. Friendship. And I'm like, what the fuck is this, you know?
Yeah, it's very odd, because, like, on the one hand, like, you know, he's clearly being honest about the fact that he's, you know, sending someone back to the Chiss, and that person will be welcome, because you have the Chiss Admiral Arilani, I think, like, welcoming Eli and being like, we will see if you can help us. But I don't know. It's very weird. I don't know. I definitely got the feeling that we were being set up for a sequel where we're going to learn more, yes. Which I don't hate. But I definitely feel like there's much more to this story. And actually, I read an interview when this book came out with Tim Zahn being like, I'm already, like, trying to, like, lobby Lucasfilm to let me write a sequel.
And then he wrote this book and he was just like, look.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Give us more Thrawn.
Right.
Always.
Give us more Chiss. I want to know more about the Chiss.
Oh my god, mm-hmm. Fucking same.
Are they, you know, all like this? You know what I don't really want to know more about?
What? Cakes?
I said, are they all like this?
I know, right? That's
what I want to know.
That was my question from last time. Like, how typical is Thrawn?
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Because can you imagine an entire civilization of just people who are Thrawn? Like, oh my god.
Fucking Vulcan.
It's wild. Stop bringing up Star Trek.
Right?
The Chiss are blue Vulcans. Like, let's be clear about that. Which is fine. I respect it, but the Chiss are blue Vulcans.
But we don't need to talk about it, because this isn't a Star Trek Star Wars crossover podcast. Anyway, sorry, I'm being rich about it.
I don't really want to know more about.
I was gonna say, you're gonna let me guess. Is it Governor Price? Because
is Governor
the
Price
the worst?
I know this isn't a review podcast, but I had thoughts about her characterization in this book.
He says zero out of five stars for Price.
Damn.
I just didn't get it. Like, her only motive seems to be revenge, which is like, okay, revenge is like a powerful motive, I guess, but like...
I guess.
I don't know. Like, we never really find out why she wants to be governor. Like, for power? Is that the only reason?
Well,
like,
I think she like wants her Lothal cred back. Like, I don't know.
But she hates Lothal.
Like, she becomes governor and is like, but I want to spend most of my time on Coruscant, like hanging out with Tarkin.
Yeah, but like, I think she has a complicated relationship with her homeworld, like everyone in Star Wars does.
Yeah, this is true.
I think it's one of those things where, like, a lot of people hate where they grew up, but if you talk smack about it, they'll, like, actually kill you.
Exactly.
I think that's how she feels about her parents' mining company and all of that.
And her parents and et cetera.
Everything. Yep.
Yo, she's a cold-blooded murderer, real talk, though.
Yeah, really.
She's
fucking nuts.
I was like, oh, she used somebody's body as a silencer for her blaster. Way to go.
Oh my god, that was so much. She fucking just exploded an entire town in a contained area.
Yeah, no, she murdered, like, tens of thousands of people.
Yeah,
just to cover up one thing so she could be fucking governor. That's so fucked up.
Also, like, I feel like she could have, like, come up with some, like, oh, we left without him, and then he must have showed up, and there was a rebel there or some shit. Like, I feel like there were ways to cover that up without murdering
people. Oh, totally.
Yeah, but that's totally true, but also, like, let us not underestimate the pettiness of the Empire. If they... Because, like, she's been a real pain in everybody's ass. So if they find a reason to, you know, whatever they do.
I mean, that's what she says. Yeah. That is what she says, to be fair. That's a good point.
That's true. I don't know. Well, then how do we view her relationship with her parents then? Because, like, you kind of, like, get this view of her as, like, this, like, just very cold person for most of the book. Like,
She loves the shit out of her parents.
I know. It's interesting. I don't know.
In the beginning, too, though. When we first meet her.
So here's my problem. And this was kind of my question about how she feels about Jawahir and Driller earlier in the book as well. You're told that she loves her parents. She does all these actions that project to you that she loves her parents. She goes into a war zone. She'll do anything to get them out of there. You know, you were told that she feels a real connection with Jawahir and Driller. She feels like she's made real friends. But she don't feel it. And I don't know why. Because all the pieces are in place, but you don't really get that sense that, like, she has fucking actual, like, emotions that are happening anywhere in her person.
That's kind of how I felt about her parents. Her relationship with her parents, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, maybe it's, like, some weird thing that we're not seeing where, like, she doesn't feel like she's ever been enough for her parents or something like that.
Like, why isn't that on the page?
I know. I'm just saying.
I know.
I don't know. Do we think it's, like, like, are we missing something? Or is it, like, maybe a weakness of, you know, Zahn just, like, didn't do a great job writing this one character? Like, I really like the book, don't get me wrong. But I do think that this character was not as strong as she could have been. Like, I definitely feel like there were opportunities. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, in a book where you only have three point of view characters, I really wanted to get more into her head, and I really wanted her to feel more different than Thrawn's point of view, but she's kind of just a human version of Thrawn, except she's projecting actions that make you think she has human connections with other people, and it's just like, but she...
You just kept waiting for there to be more there.
Yeah.
And there just never really was.
That was how I felt.
Yeah, I agree. I was, like, frustrated with that, especially because, like, although yes to all that, it's frustrating that Zahn, to me, whatever, I don't want to shit on Tim Zahn, I think he did a great job writing this book, but
right,
it's frustrating to me that if she was a point of view character, I wanted more of that. I think his characterization of her totally fit with everything that we see in Rebels, right? Like, I think that was spot on. I think, like, given, you know, what we know, he totally went along with that, but just, like, built on it very well. But I think he could have taken some more liberties about, you know, that internal dialogue piece of her, other than making the internal dialogue, I want power, I want power, I want power, fuck everybody.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, everything she did, like, tracks with the, you know, what little screen time she actually gets, but what I think we talk about this a lot, but the beauty of the books is that we get to really dive deeper into everything, into the world, into the characters, and I just didn't get that. So, I don't know.
Conspiracy theory, Price might be coming back, and Lucasfilm may have told him he wasn't allowed to do some stuff around her, but anyway.
It's possible, but I mean, I guess my only question there would be, like, where are we missing something, you know? Because it's not like her childhood, or, I mean, we don't know anything about her childhood, but it's not like her, like, origin story is mysterious anymore. Like, we know about it, it's just, we know the facts of it, and we don't really, I don't know, maybe, never know.
I'm just thinking, like, next season, like, this upcoming season of Rebels or something.
Yeah, we'll see.
That, like, we couldn't get more of a something-something because they wanted it to be revealed on the show, not in the book.
Yeah, that's true, maybe.
I don't know.
We'll see.
We know
it almost makes me want to go back and reread the original, or not reread, read for me, the original Thrawn trilogy, because that's the trilogy that introduced Mara Jade.
I can read that with you. We could read
maybe,
that
maybe
together.
one day. But like, I want to know if he wrote Mara Jade better than he wrote Price.
I mean, she's beloved, so you have to assume.
I
so.
Know you have to. Well, you have to assume that she's written well. But I mean, the Legend books in general are beloved, and they're not all good. Scott's fired.
Damn. All right.
I mean, Star Wars yeah, stuff in general is curious, beloved, like, and a lot of it is fire trash. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
this is just who we are as a fandom.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I wanted to get one more point in here, on like one of the more like plot-based point before we, you know, move on to the wrap up and just start talking about like larger concepts. I'm fascinated by the Chiss Ascendancy and what it could mean for the future of Star Wars.
Totally.
Same.
I am absolutely fascinated.
I need more information. I need the most information.
Because like, when it in the beginning, you kind of think like, oh, the Chiss. They're maybe like a planet or two. Like, no.
No, they're like Mandalore.
They are their own empire, and they are really strong. And Thrawn does not view the Empire as a threat.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Like, that's crazy.
Like, Thrawn has a direct line to Palpatine, and he does not view the Empire as a threat.
Yeah, he's like, this is chill, this is fine.
Yeah, like, so like, A, is this the future of Star Wars expansion? Like, we talked kind of about how this book obviously expands the plot, but also geographic expansion into the unknown regions. Is that where the future of Star Wars expansion is? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
It's true. It is very mysterious. And then my other question is, of course, Thrawn isn't afraid of the threat from the Empire. What he is afraid of is this some nebulous reference to a greater evil that he keeps making, especially when he's talking to Palpatine. And I'm wondering if it's kind of this Game of Thrones situation where it's like, while you're all having little squabbles over here, the White Walkers are fucking coming, and you're all gonna die. Like, I need to know more.
This is true.
So
one, I've been working on my own conspiracy theory. Let me put on my tinfoil hat here.
Ooh.
But so, and I'm for those who have not read Aftermath, I'm going to get into the barest bit of Aftermath backstory and spoilers. It's like not even a spoiler. But
I'm tagging it as a spoiler anyway because
have I read Aftermath?
You have not read Aftermath.
No, ma'am.
Yet.
I was gonna say.
So be warned going in. It's not actually a spoiler. But the premise of the first Aftermath book is that there's all these Imperial leaders meeting on this planet to discuss what to do with the Empire, basically, now that Palpatine's dead. One of those is like Palpatine's advisor, and like comes off as this kind of like spiritual guru who's like a dark side worshiper who like knew very much what Palpatine was, knew what Vader was, and like was like a worshiper and like some kind of like high priest of like worshiping the dark side as a non-force sensitive being.
So he's like a dark side guardian of the wills.
Yeah, let's call it that.
Sure.
He talks about his vision for the Empire, which what he wants to do is to go into unexplored space and seek out the source of the dark side. Which he says was something Palpatine always wanted to do and never had a chance to do. And there is a specific source of the dark side that is somewhere that is not charted.
What the fuck?
And
you know
then.
What's funny about that? I know the source of the dark side, and it's Ezra Bridger.
Well, hang on. Hang on, though.
Oh, please. Hang on. Are you going to tie it back in?
Oh, am I going to tie it
back
in?
Oh, my God. This is so much.
Because part two of my conspiracy theory
Fuck.
Is that where the Empire goes, and this is, it's a little bit more of a spoiler, but we know from Force Awakens, the way the Imperial fleet becomes the First Order is that they flee to the unknown regions.
Yep.
Like, they find a way to chart it, and they flee to the unknown regions.
Right.
And out of, you know, that comes the First Order, and out of that becomes Snoke, or out of that comes Snoke.
Who's Ezra?
Who may or may not be Ezra Bridger. we don't know who Snoke is yet.
He's Ezra.
It's Ezra.
He may be Ezra, but we don't know. What if Snoke is this greater evil? He was lurking in the unknown regions. The Imperial remnants found him, and he is helping them take over the galaxy. Because, like, I don't know. Like, this is all completely crazy and complete speculation, but, like, it just kind of goes to show, like, there's In a way that really hasn't happened since they, you know, reset the canon and put together this new canon, there's this whole area of expansion for them to do. Like, all the previous books have kind of hewed very closely to the timeline, like the accepted timeline, the Skywalker saga, and the characters within it. This is a whole nother thing that we could be looking at. And I wonder if Snoke is, maybe, is Snoke Ezra? Is Snoke the manifestation of this greater evil that the Chiss are so terrified of? Is he deeper into the dark side than even the Sith were? I don't know.
You just ruined my life.
I know. I just exploded your brain hole.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm upset. That's a lot. That's it. Mic drop.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. And
right. No. Well, actually, that does kind of bring us to the end of what we want to talk about for this one. We're going to be following up with our next episode, which is our wrap-up of Thrawn. We're doing, as we have in the past, our kind of wrap-up, looking back at the book as a whole, some of the themes, some of the things, of how it ties into the universe, which we may or may not be recording right now. Stay tuned. But as Kristen mentioned last week, we do want to give people plenty of time to get the next book out of your library, out of your local independent or used bookstore. We are going to be reading, and cue the maniacal laughter from Kate. All right, we'll work on that. But we're going to be reading A New Dawn by John... It's okay. We'll train you. It'll be okay. We'll take you to the unknown regions. It'll be fine.
Oh, my God.
Good idea.
A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller.
Yeah! Kenna!
Oh, my God. Kate is yelling so much.
So much yelling.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Kristen, have fun, like, sorting out the levels in this episode, because I, like, here, I'm super loud because that's just how I talk.
You guys sound fine.
Do we? You sound really soft to me.
I mean, so. We'll see. But yeah, your ears are broken also. You can hear Kate because she's sitting next to you.
And I'm screaming. And I'm screaming.
And she's scrumming.
She's scrumming. She loves to scrum.
I do.
All right. Well, I think that unless either of you have anything to leave our viewers with.
Yanara.
Use your, library and local bookstores. You know, we're horse for that over here.
Please do. And as always, please rate, review, subscribe, tell us nice things. Follow us on Twitter. Please tweet at us. We're super active on Twitter. And by that, I mean, if you tweet at me, I will respond to you and just retweet you and just stick you out on the wider internet, because that's the kind of person I am. So we're on Twitter at Book Wars Pod. And we're also on Tumblr as Book Wars Pod. And I swear at some point we will make some kind of plan for that Tumblr such that there's actual content on there instead of just, like, reposting all our episodes.
Also online at bookwarspod.com.
Yes. And you can email us your questions, comments, fanfic recommendations, bookwarspod@gmail.com.
Your Snoke theories, but only if they don't suck.
Especially if they suck, please send them to us.
I love garbage Snoke theories.
We're just, so you guys know, as much fun as we're having, we're also trying to work pretty hard behind the scenes to get some more good content up for people, and we are very excited about hopefully what will be going on in the future. So please keep listening. Thank you guys so much for your support.
Absolutely. All right, and we will see you next week.
Do you guys still have the sock over it, or are you using the actual screen?
No, we have the actual
Oh, great. Pop filter.